Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm here in the studio. I represent the political center and have with me on the political left, Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Hey, hello there.
And sitting in for Representative Dan McKay on the right, Thomas Wright, who is a Republican National Committee member.
It's great to be with you two. Thanks for having me.
We love having you, Thomas. And of course, you and Jim have a lot of history when you guys were both chairs of respective parties.
Thomas is actually one of the top four people in the whole Republican Party nationally. And he's the chief dog representing Utah. He's a big deal.
No, Jim's just a good friend. And it's good to be with him again on air.
Yeah, great to have you, Thomas. We need to start talking about the Kavanaugh hearings, and there's so many ways to come at this. I'm just going to share from the political middle something that's been going on in my mind. When I first heard of Judge Kavanaugh's nomination, I was at home. It was in the middle of the day, and I just happened to be home, and I knew it was going to be announced, so I watched the whole thing, heard his speech. I was really impressed. I thought, this guy is good. You know, he said to me all the right things. I fast forward now to what I've heard him do, both in his testimony and through the whole nomination process, and he feels like a chameleon to me, a guy that can be whatever you want him to be at the time. And so this has just been my journey through the political middle, because the challenge in the political middle is to take what you like from both sides, and I'm to the point where his disposition and his ability to be impartial I really hold in question, and I don't feel like he's who I would want to be my Supreme Court justice. So I started it. You guys throw water on it or put gasoline.
It's hard to believe that not that long ago there was only 3 votes against Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I mean, a Supreme Court choice ought not to be getting one's own clan on there. It just shouldn't be there. Unfortunately, we've devolved to that, and all of the clan and tribal instincts. Democrats don't want to know what all the facts are. They just want to get rid of the guy. Republicans don't care what is going on. I mean, this is a degradation of an institution that is the final arbiter in the United States of America. We can't tear this down for one judge or another for one moment in time. It's the final moment where we all say we disagree, but we respect this institution and we move on with our lives. This has been a tragedy for the United States of America.
Thomas, give us some perspective.
I think, too, it's a tragedy for the two families involved. I think the process has really let them down individually. And I think I'm as sad about that as anything.
It's awful.
You know,
when people are doing political cartoons about your daughter praying and...
You know, when people said things about President Obama's kids, it made me sick. When people do it to President Trump, it makes me sick. And I watch these two families and I say, you know what? We as a country are better than this.
Yeah.
We can treat people with more respect than this. We can get to the facts and we can come to consensus in a better fashion. And I agree with Jim. It is the degradation of what's going on. And we as citizens, we as Americans, and I am American before I'm a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always prided myself on that. We have to demand more from the people on our side and stop attacking the people on the other side. It's okay to be political, but we got to stop being so partisan.
Thomas, give us insight into what it feels like to be Jeff Flake right now.
I think he is really operating under the dictates of his conscience. I think he's really trying to...
How refreshing.
Yeah, I think he's trying to balance it. He comes across to me as somebody who... you look at him in that hearing when he stands up and walks to the other side,
mm-hmm.
and you say to yourself, there's somebody that's really torn. I mean, he's really trying to sort it out, and he's not willing to take sides and be tribal, and he really wanted to see it. And wasn't it refreshing to see?
Yeah. Well, and I never thought Jeff Flake would be my moderate guy.
Yeah. And I think he put the Republicans in a better place. And I think that's why President Trump wanted to go forward with the weak investigation.
Yeah.
I think that's why the Senate allowed that to happen, McConnell and Grassley. And it was a thoughtful moment in a very unthoughtful proceeding.
Yeah, Jim?
I just have to say how totally disappointed I am in Orrin Hatch and Mike Lee. I mean, you cannot say that both of these people are magnificent. Both of them have been hurt. Both of them are credible. One of them is a complete horrendous liar. Now, I'm not saying which one, and you can make that, but they take the same facts. I mean, either Kavanaugh brutally sexually attacked that woman. I mean, she was there with every detail about the music and about catching the eye of the third man there. Either she's lying and she ought to go to jail for a long, long time for putting this country through this, or that man, whatever whatever sin he may have committed in high school, it was perjury. Mm-hmm. As a sitting federal judge, and he ought to go to jail too. So the Lee and Hatch thing, after she came out all creditable, was to say, well, you know, they both are so right, and it's so bad. You know what? I'm not saying that. I'm saying one of these two is responsible for this.
Yeah, Thomas, I mean,
I don't think you can lay this at the feet of Senator Lee and Senator Hatch. You can certainly be disappointed in them if you want to be.
Hatch's comment about her being attractive was unfortunate, but his staff was quick to jump on it. Did you hear this, Thomas?
Yeah, I must have missed that one.
He basically made a comment that she was, you know, pleasing and attractive, and quickly his staff jumped in and said, when he uses the term attractive, it means something different.
It would be akin to me laying at the feet of Senator Feinstein, who could have had this investigated, could have done it a lot earlier, and saying it's their fault, and Jim can say it's our fault. At the end of the day, we need to come together and recognize the way Jim said it. It's the degradation of one of the most important institutions in our country, and we should both agree that that's not okay, and we should hold our respective people accountable for what they've done wrong instead of pointing the finger to the other side. There's plenty of blame to go around.
So let's do...
And we should be more thoughtful.
Let me defend Senator Hatch.
Okay.
Because you can't lay it at their feet.
I stand by that he's been pretty bad during this whole thing, but when he used the word attractive, I think he meant in the broader sense of an attractive candidate or an attractive
Senator Hatch has a pretty impeccable record of decorum in the United States Senate. Yeah, I mean, he worked across the aisle.
Integrity and all sorts of things.
Although, pick one word and throw the whole
thing.
Although
this week he put out a vicious, miserable, scalding, unsubstantiated, gossip-filled thing about Dr. Ford that was way below his level.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the Julie Swetnick tweet, if any of you want to look that up. Hey, just real quickly, on the left, right, center, let's say, how does this end? Thomas, what do you think happens here with Kavanaugh?
I think unless something, it's just so fluid, Natalie. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing is, I hear Jim talk about it, and it's just so fluid. Every hour, every minute of every day changes. I think if there's nothing that comes forward more, or if the FBI doesn't find something he lied about under oath, I think he'll be confirmed.
And how do you think it ends, Jim?
I think he gets confirmed. And I think, you know, there's a moment where Lyndon Johnson passed the Civil Rights Bill in 1964, the first Civil Rights Bill. And he was a couple of his aides came running in and said, Mr. President, we did it. We passed the Civil Rights Bill. And he said, yes. And we've also lost the South forever. And he recognized that that's a moment. I think the Kavanaugh situation may be a victory, but I think it may mobilize a lot of, not Democrats, they're already, you know, frantic, but a lot of people in the middle that are looking at this whole process and going, is this the way we want to be governed? Mm-hmm. I just think it could be that kind of moment.
I agree, but I think people are giving both sides the benefit of the doubt because the process has been so poorly executed.
Yeah, awful. You know, from the political middle, I'm still thinking that Kavanaugh doesn't make it. Hmm. So we'll see if I have any sense there. I'm really troubled by his ability now to be an impartial judge after what he'd been through. I mean, his hate for the left is just so extraordinary at this point that it troubles me that he could be
Sounded
effective.
Like Trump wrote that speech.
Hey, before we end this segment, let's just quickly, what do you guys think is going to happen in the Republican and Senate in these midterm elections? Are Republicans going to lose the House and Senate? What are you seeing, Thomas?
I'm going with the defy history, and I'll tell you why.
So that means in midterm elections, you still keep your...
You've asked me for predictions before. So I'm glad you're asking me. Maybe I can go with another one. I think
he was right in saying that Trump would be elected.
Yeah,
is what he's hinting
at. I see that wave. I don't know why I could see that one, but I could. I think the Republicans do add a seat or two in the Senate. Mm-hmm. If you just look at the map and you look at it race by race and you look at the states, I think that they maintain control, if not add, to the Senate.
Interesting.
The House, I could see arguments both ways, but I think the Republicans are going to defy history. I think this Kavanaugh thing has awoken everyone across both spectrums, and I think people have their own opinions. And I just think that the polling in this country is not accurate. It's accurate.
So you're feeling something.
I feel something out there. I think there are seats that will be lost, but
how
I think some
you,
will be won.
I think what you're feeling is indigestion. look, I've been around.
I've missed being with Jim.
So
I missed you, man.
Long. I don't go get elected to some. I'd vote for you.
Good. I'm glad you said that on air.
What can they do to me? I've been around long enough to know about these waves. I remember 64. I remember 72. I remember 1980. I remember when Newt Gingrich came in. They come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
This may be the most telegraphed one, but I think they don't split at the final moment. They all break one way, and I think the breaking is going to be dramatic, and the Democrats are going to come out against all odds, given the architecture of the race with the Senate and the House.
Wow. So we got the right saying the right's going to hold.
I mean, he's right. Historically the Senate speaking, saying the D's, in a midterm, party controls all. Yeah.
I think the D's take over the House and Senate keeps the.
Oh, see, there's the middle.
The Republicans keep the Senate. Yeah, there's the middle. Hey, you're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, Natalie Gochner with Jim DeBacchus and Thomas Wright. In our next segment, we've got some other great news to talk about. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
This is Thomas Wright on the right.
Jim DeBacchus, proudly on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. I like to say I come from where problems get solved. Take the best ideas from Jim and Thomas and make law from it. I want to start this segment by talking about what's affectionately known as Prop 2. Proposition 2, this is marijuana for medical purposes. Has another name, I know. Looks like there's a lot of behind-the-scenes conversations going on about some sort of compromise. It involves people that have been against Proposition 2. It involves libertarian thinking groups in our state. Libertas, others. Let's go to Jim as the elected official. Jim, what are you hearing? Like, what's going on behind the scenes?
There is a compromise talk, and there have been frantic compromise talks. I talked to five of the patients groups that really created the whole thing. Four of them have never even been talked to. This is phony. This is a phony compromise by people that were all opposed to it anyway, and a few kind of straw people that they brought in that were on the other side. This is the Utah political machine screaming reefer madness, and they're going to have a big press conference, and they're going to say, don't do this. This will change the world. It'll be terrible. It's not. What this is going to do is it's going to send a bold, strong message that, you know what, we want this. The legislature is going to get their fingers into it after the election, and I'll tell you, whether or not we actually get help to the patients will depend on the pressure that the legislature is under, because every inclination they have is to defeat this, because they've done it. So when you vote yes on two, what you're voting for is the patients to have some heft in the negotiations that are going to go on when the legislature gets its hands on the matter. If it goes down a defeat, that's the end of it. The patients will get nothing.
Thomas, I'm imagining that you see this differently.
Yeah, it's possible to be for medicinal marijuana and against Proposition 2. Mm-hmm. And the reason is the devil is always in the details in legislation. And Natalie, you know this from your experience, and Jim does, being a state senator. It's unfortunate that this is being done by ballot initiative, because it can't be the fluid process that can happen in a legislative body where the bill can be amended, it can be edited, it can be tweaked, and it can be done in a correct way. So what you have is you have a ballot initiative that really now can't be changed. And while there are a lot of people that believe in medicinal marijuana and want the legalization so that patients can be alleviated of the pain that they're suffering, are just a little bit worried about the language in the bill and the dispensaries and the people growing their own marijuana and some of the unintended consequences of it. And that isn't meant to be a scare tactic, and that's not part of the Utah political machine. It's just, if you read the initiative, you'll read that there's a lot of things in there that I think the people that are running it wish they could change right now, because the overwhelming number of Republicans in this state, I think, support medicinal marijuana and want to see patients receive that relief.
I see it much like you do, Thomas. Jim, you say, you know, you're leaving the patient group out. And I think our state hit a tipping point. I think that the tipping point has occurred where we are willing to say we're ready for this. We just got to do it right. And the way you do it right is not by this, you know, ballot initiative that has language you can't fix and change and negotiate at this point, this fixed language that in my reading is really problematic. And what I love, even if the patient groups aren't there yet, we are moving to the middle. And I think problems are getting solved.
Why do we have a ballot initiative? It's because the governor, the legislature, the powers that be, the LDS Church, all the lobbyists said behind closed doors, said when they had their opportunity to have all this input, which I find now they want input. Oh, my goodness, we've been for this all along. I find it totally disingenuous because they had every opportunity when those patients were there. They saw them suffering, and they wanted nothing to do with it. They went behind closed doors. They killed every single bill. And now, wah, 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 we're going to bring this up. Well, you know what? If you would have been there, we wouldn't be in this position. So the people have no choice but to pass Prop 2, and then the legislature will listen, because I don't trust them.
Yeah. Well, we will see this probably in the next week.
It sounds like we all agree, though, that the Prop 2, the writing of it is a little bit less than ideal, right, Senator? And so he's just saying, vote for it and we'll fix it. And we're saying, let's not do something that we're going to regret and then have to fix it. Let's just do it the right way. So I guess it's just all a matter of approach. But we agree that it's not the language that we all want.
And we've got people at the negotiating table that can make a compromise. I think it's real progress. It's real progress. Jim, I think we'll get there. But do you want to bet something on it? What do we do?
I love this show.
we'll
high five.
We'll go to Denver and we'll.
Okay, so let's go to Governor Romney for a minute. The Wilson Romney campaign. Turns out that Utah is usually probably not on the big screen when it comes to Russian hackers, but because of Governor Romney, some people think that there's a chance that we'll be more targeted by Russian Chinese hackers. So our chief election officer, Spencer Cox, is going for it to try and preserve some of those protections.
Oh, it's great to ensure that elections are done fairly.
It won't matter in this one.
Any server of any magnitude, especially a state-owned server that is dealing in elections, is under attack all the time, whether Mitt Romney's running or not. I mean, I run a business, a small business, and our servers are under attack all the time. Yeah. Everyone's always trying to hack in using automated scripts, using bots to try to find ways to get in. That's always going on. But it's good to see the elevated concern, and I think everybody wants to make sure that the election's fair and the results are accurate.
Jim, your comment.
Thomas is good buds with Mitt Romney, and actually, I had a good meeting with his people, thanks to Thomas. And the big issue here, if the polls hold, it is what Mitt Romney is going to show up in Washington. I mean, which one is it going to be? And I'm not sarcastic. I mean, I really want to know, is he going to be the one who stands up to Donald Trump or to anybody that is disingenuous and is a buffoon and is a circus clown? Is he going to be there with his soul, or is he going to be the puppet master like we've seen Lindsey Graham and Chris Stewart turn into, where they all just kind of fall in line and will go wherever they want to go? Mitt Romney has the ability to really impact the United States of America, but not if he becomes one of those sycophants, and we'll see if he gets elected what happens.
It's going to be fun. I'm excited for that. Election. I think Governor Romney will prevail, and I think he'll turn some heads in Washington.
And just real quick, he has not been that. He has stood up to the president all along when he hasn't agreed with him. He's going to be very effective because he's willing to stand up when he sees something that's wrong. Utah's going to be lucky to have him in the Senate, and the Senate's going to be a better body because of Mitt Romney.
What would be wonderful, because I know Thomas talks to Romney all the time. I can't imagine a person more qualified to take the healthcare mess in the United States of America, to take Obamacare, to take pre-existing conditions, who understands the depth of it, who would have the ears and the minds of people in the Republican caucus, put everybody together and come up with the next generation of healthcare in the United States of America. Because there's problems with Obamacare, but what the Republicans haven't done is said, okay, really, this is where we want to go, and this is what we want to do. If Mitt Romney did that, imagine what his legacy would be. The guy that brought everybody together, everybody griped, everybody complained, we get costs down, and we save healthcare in the United States of America. It's a legacy waiting for a statesman.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch how it happens. Hey, let's hear your quick take on the McAdams Mia Love race. There's a lot of fireworks there. It's definitely turned negative. The latest charge has been you know, Republican leaders criticizing Mayor McAdams for his campaign ads about lowering county taxes. And our co-host has been among those, McKay saying that the ads are misleading. And, you know, where do you guys come down? What are you seeing?
This is what good elections are all about. Two candidates going to fight it out.
Yeah.
They're going to try to draw their differences. I don't like the negative tone of any campaign. I don't like pointing out somebody else's weaknesses or trying to make them look bad. But they're trying to draw distinct differences. And when elected officials like Representative McKay and others see an ad and they don't like it, they have the right to speak up and say so. And McAdams people have the right to speak up when they see something they don't like. This is just a great, hard-fought election. We don't see a lot of them in Utah.
How are you predicting it, Thomas?
It's Mia Love's race. I mean, I mean, she's the incumbent. She's been effective in Washington, D.C., and I think it's her race to win. But McAdams is running a hard race, and he's not to be underestimated.
Uber-talented leader and has an incredible track record, so it makes
and
it fun.
He's well-respected.
Yeah. Jim?
I think Mia ought to be... It's a disgrace.
Oh, come on.
No, listen. I'm talking
Speaking
about...
Speaking of civility.
I'm just telling the truth. I mean, those ads where she claims credit for getting the Utah gentleman out of Venezuela... I mean, give me a break. Let me tell you something I haven't said publicly, because I wouldn't say it, because it's not, it just isn't me. But I'm going to say it because it's so freaky what Mia Love is doing. I have letters to the Venezuelan embassy, to officials in Venezuela, talking about going to Venezuela quietly, talking about working things, and communication back and forth. I think Orrin Hatch, of course, had a great deal, probably the vast majority. If he had gotten out and I had had even the least bit of anything to do with it, it would have just gone on. I think it's disgraceful, and I think there's been such a dearth of achievement by Mia Love that she's getting into the Zap tax. Really, the Zap tax was, everybody knows what the Zap tax is. And to say that Ben McAdams is a liar because the Zap tax continued on.
He supported the most popular tax known to this state.
I mean,
it is about that. You know that.
Yeah.
We love our Zap tax.
I love the word popular and tax put together. Not for me.
But we love our soccer fields and we love our zoo and we love our arts and culture.
Okay. I was probably too hard on her. But
I just don't think. And maybe you do know that she wasn't involved, but I'm not sure anybody really knows exactly what happened in the release of Josh Holt. I just think that it's very plausible that the claims she's making are true. But this is what I was talking about. And if she says that she was involved in it, I have no reason not to believe her. But this is what I was talking about. If Representative McKay and others want to challenge Ben McAdams on his tax claim, people like Senator DeBacus, who support Ben McAdams, have the right to challenge Mia on her Josh Holt
ad. And it'll go down to the wire, but the catbird seat is the incumbents.
Yeah, it's hard to beat incumbents.
You know, it would be cool if she'd have one town hall meeting after all these years of serving. One time.
She's had town halls.
She hasn't by phone. She seriously has never had a town hall.
She's met with constituents. To act like there's been no
that's
town hall.
That's different.
That's the definition of a town hall.
We have to go to Gripes, but I want to do one more before we go to Gripes. Our producer will die about this, but we have to go to Logan, Utah for just a minute because we had big news hit about the Secret Service picking up a gentleman who is allegedly guilty of the ricin attacks. Jim's looking at you. You don't know this news.
No.
We better go to Thomas first so you can think about it. But am I getting this about right, Thomas?
Why did it have to be somebody from Utah? I mean, this is not who we are. And anyway, it's just really unfortunate. One, that somebody thinks that that's okay. Two, that they actually would do something like that. But thankfully, the authorities were able to trace it back. And I guess he's presumed innocent until he's convicted. But
it came to a Logan address.
Yeah, it came back to a Utah address is what I was hearing in the news studio.
Jim, you look
I
concerned.
Hope he's not a Democrat. That's
a Democrat in Logan?
Yeah.
I don't know, Jim. I don't like your chances.
Yeah.
If you want to make one of those Natalie bets with me,
let's go to Gripes. And I'll start just so you guys can be thinking about yours. I'm going to gripe about Judge Kavanaugh, and I hated his comment about the beer, where he said, "I like beer. I drink a lot of beer. I drank a lot in high school. I drink it now. Don't you like beer?" I just like, seriously? Like, that is the caliber of his response to the question about, you know, this event. So that's my gripe. I did not think that was classy.
Library Square is my gripe. You know, we've spent $100 million with the homeless. And I saw
it's that
walking
high. 100 million.
In 100 million. I saw walking in a mom with a 3 or 4 year old toddler, and I saw a bunch of people that have taken over with a tent and needles around, and that mom grabbed her child. You know, people that aren't homeless also have the right to go in a park and to go to a library and not have their children threatened or stay away permanently. We need to solve this, but we also recognize that there's people other than homeless people that also need to be protected.
Jim ran out the clock on me, but my gripe, I wish we could get away from so many ballot initiatives. I do not think it's a healthy way to run a state government. I think tackling the issues of the day is the most important thing to do, and I don't like doing it by ballot initiative. It's wrought with too many unintended consequences.
Well done. Natalie Gochner with Jim DeBacchus and Thomas Wright. Programs produced by Emily Means. Thanks for listening.